Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Sandy Williams is in the studio. Sandy, I wanted to talk, man, about what's happening with the threats that are happening to elected officials and others who folk on the right, unfortunately, don't like it. Adam Kinzinger, who's a Republican, does not walk, you know, with along the same lines as some of the folk who just believe everything Trump says and is not a MAGA guy. He's receiving, and his family's receiving all sorts of death threats. The young lady who was who spoke on the
that testified before the committee.
She was receiving Sandy, what is happening?
Well, you know, and to be honest with you, the Supreme Court justices are
receiving
threats, and you know, I think our country's slipping. You know, we're slipping into desperation. People who don't get their way, and I think it has to do with this fact that nobody feels like they're actually represented, and I suppose conservatives feel that way, but they're very. The path that's being taken by conservatives towards getting what they want is surprising, and it's surprisingly fascistic, quite frankly. If you don't agree with them, even people in the party, Adam Kinzinger, who seems like a noble fellow,
he is,
and is doing things out of a spirit of duty. Is being attacked for it because he's not towing the line ideologically, not defending the team, so to speak. And it's a very, very troublesome, very troublesome. I think societally the United States has broke down on civility. We've also broken down on this notion of duty and honor, quite frankly, to the point of just pragmatic chasing of power. This tinkering with the election process is the most cynical thing that you can imagine a party doing to try and get its way, and yet it's happening in plain sight.
Yeah, it's in the open.
Openly and notoriously, and it's all designed to make it hard for some people to vote so that the people who do vote are the people who are likely to elect a conservative minority.
Yeah, but Sandy, so when you see that and the rest of the world sees it, you no longer can then talk about your great democracy.
Well, it certainly makes hypocrisy out of us marching around with our military cane, waving it around the world, telling people how to behave and what kind of governments to install. You know, the Chinese shake their head when we start tisking about their level of democracy when, you know, we have so many people incarcerated in our prisons. You know, we can say, well, they're there because they ought to be, but I'm sure that's the way the USSR felt about the people who were in the gulags in Siberia. They're there because they ought to be. So, you know, our society has a lot to do to fix itself, and this notion of American exceptionalism that has us talking about our great American democracy seems to be ignoring some realities.
But Sandy, we have to realize that there is something wrong. We've got people, again, these people who are threatening Kinzinger and others who are making these sorts of threats towards a man because he doesn't agree with what is mindfully and truthfully wrong in the first place.
Right.
Yeah, it would be different if, you know, if he was against truth.
Well, the thing is, what he's saying and what he's talking about is something that
will benefit this country.
No, but the entire American public witnessed it.
Right.
So we all witnessed what went on. There's very little of what the committee is uncovering that isn't stuff that we either knew happened or surmised was happening because of what we were actually seeing. So this is like people in a jury threatening one another for what it is they all heard out there in the courtroom, or even worse, what we witnessed all ourselves. You know, we witnessed January 6th.
You know,
everything happened in front of our very eyes. We could all be witnesses before that January 6th committee about what we saw. And so Adam Kinzinger is being attacked for simply saying things that we all know are true.
And it wasn't, January 6th wasn't 1820. It was a year ago, a little over a year and a half ago.
Right.
So, I mean, what are they thinking about? And then you see.
Well, it's ideological purity. It's the team taking one for the team. I mean, so many crimes. First of all, having been a lawyer, I know that there are plenty of people who are loyal team players in corporations who have done things that are not legal, but they've done it out of a feeling of team play and protecting the organization that they're in, okay? So they develop a noble theory for what is illegal conduct. And they do it typically in the name of supporting the team, the organization that they have committed themselves to. And it's very common. It's a very common phenomena. It's a common phenomena in the Army. People who commit war crimes are doing it for the purpose of accomplishing victory. And it's common all around. And right now it's happening politically. We have all these people committed to the conservative team who will do anything to make sure that that team wins.
But, Sandy, I don't care, you know, how you, what they say, put lipstick on a pig. A lie is a lie is a lie is a lie is a lie. And so we can't make the truth out of a lie. Like you said, we all saw it. And
well,
yet,
except if it's for the team, then, you know, in fact, we all know about situations where people, you know, there's someone who, what do we call them, a snitch?
Yeah.
Snitches get treated worse than almost anybody, right? Because they're breaking the oath. That is sort of the subconscious oath that everyone takes to be a part of the team. Snitches tell the truth, and they typically get threatened for it.
You know, Sandy, all I can ever do is think back to my parents and their time and know how much pride there was in the country, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what all of us... That's what we saw. I'm not saying that it was 100% correct on everything, but there was some pride in the nation that we were going to do what was in the best interest of the American people for the American people.
Although, you know, it's true. But even then, the team was doing things, we blackballed all kinds of supposed com simp directors and actors in Hollywood. You know, we interned a whole lot of Japanese,
folks. This has been in our DNA from the inception?
Well, yes, our DNA is part of our DNA is being part of a society and doing what it takes to make the society successful. And we have been able to be manipulated, and we have manipulated ourselves based on that proclivity we all have to be a team player into causing people to do things they wouldn't otherwise do. And it's clear, you can go back in history and find example after example after example of people who you would never expect to do something like what they're doing, who will tell you they're doing it because it's for the
benefit
of the organization, of the team. They're getting rid of the Jewish problem in Europe. You know, we will do some horrendous things in the name of the team.
But Sandy, as a novice, and we sit back and we talk about the Constitution. We send people to fight and die over document.
But look how we are warping.
And the law, which is supposed to be blind. And
right. But look how the people who wave the Constitution around the most bend it.
Yes.
In a way that is totally a mirror image of what the Constitution's actually all about. People who pick up the Constitution and say, this is why we ought to pray in school. Okay?
Yes.
But the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution is all about keeping church and state way separate from one another. Or they pick up the Constitution and use it to argue for whatever they want. It's a constitutional right, you know, a right to bear arms, to carry assault weapons. to have 20 million assault weapons in private hands, to make sure. I mean, the Constitution is much like the team, and people use it for the purposes they want to use it for.
You know, Sandy, the reason I love having you on so much is because I know that the conversation that you and I are having doesn't happen too many other places. People draw the line. We don't want to expose our nation. Dirty laundry. But to me...
Well, for me, that's an act of July 4th loyalty. I think that what we need to do is get our country to be everything it can and should be, and we ought to make sure that we don't blink and ignore the things that could turn our country into something awful, okay? And countries can be awful, you know, and countries can turn into something awful if the people aren't vigilant.
And right now, we're at a juncture where people in this country are going to have to make decisions, right? I mean, not just follow.
Yep.
They're going to have to get engaged and involved in our own personal lives and what we're doing. I'm not saying that doesn't matter, but we've got to look deeper than that, right?
Well, I know, and you know, de Tocqueville, a French philosopher. Maybe when we come back.
Yeah.
I was reading some de Tocqueville a couple of days ago, and it's sort of interesting.
All right, got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. Well, the times are good.
Just came to see you'd never do that to me, would you, baby? It's being around you is all I see, is what I want to do. We ought to stay.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You text us, the same number. You know, Sandy, I remember about 2 weeks ago when there was all the great fanfare about the Democrats and Republicans doing something about guns.
Yeah.
Man, they really led you to believe that, man, we really got something to accomplish.
Well, I mean, that's like political spin. You know, I heard Biden announcing when he came back from the Mideast, he said, you know, before I left the Mideast, I signed the toughest gun, and it might be true. It might be the toughest gun control law enacted for a very long time, but it's not very tough.
No.
It deals with assault rifles and things. You know, the genie is so far out of the bottle in the United States on guns that... you know, we got 400 million guns in private hands. We got 20 million assault rifles in private hands. You know, they could stop selling guns tomorrow, and we have a problem that would last for a very long time. Guns have a long shelf life. You know, they don't just go out of. I've got two guns at home that belong to my great grandfather that date back to 1837.
And they probably still work.
Oh, yeah, they would.
Yeah, no.
Yeah. So, I mean, guns don't wear out. You know, and unfortunately, the ones that do wear out, it's because they've been used far too much.
You know, Sandy, another horrific crime, and you get tired of talking about it because...
Well, it's crazy. You know, people... I was talking on the tour, in fact, with a guy, and he was going down the guns, the guns don't kill people. People kill people. Right. And I said, and crazy people kill people.
Yeah, people.
He said, yeah. And I said, and crazy people are everywhere, right?
Yeah.
I said, yeah. And I said, well, if a crazy person goes crazy in Japan, they kill one person with a knife before they get killed themselves. In the United States, a crazy person picks up an AR-15 and, you know, he can knock off 46 people in Las Vegas. You know, it's crazy. You know, the fact is that crazy people exist everywhere. We aren't going to get rid of mental infirmity.
Right. But they're hiding behind that.
But the tool of killing that is used makes a big difference in terms of what happens when someone goes bonkers.
Well, you know, I said the last several weeks, I was talking about it, and I said, you say guns don't kill people, people kill people, people with guns kill people.
Yeah, and people so, with guns can kill a lot more people.
Yeah, 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 they don't have guns. Yeah,
if you have a fork, you can do some damage, but you're not going to kill six people in a parade in Highland.
But, Sandy, it is certainly getting to a point where if this society doesn't make some strong decisions— I mean, we have to enough of this already, right? I mean, somewhere some sanity has to come into play.
Well, you'd think it would have come into play quite a long time ago. I mean, this is a play that whose act keeps happening over and over again. There's a curtain call, and then there's another curtain call,
right.
And it just keeps happening. I don't have much hope for that because I think we jumped the tracks a long time ago, when the NRA turned from a hunting society into a gun manufacturer's representative group, and when we turned the Second Amendment totally on its head, and when everyone bought into it. I mean, it's not just the Supreme Court that jumped the track. So did politicians and society. And we now think the Second Amendment is something that I don't think it was ever intended to be, but I don't think it'll ever change. Unlike Roe v. Wade, which we were able to change, the court found a way to make that change. They decided to do it. They'll never make that decision about gun rights.
You know, I was watching a... I think it was, I forgot where it was, maybe it was in a where the alderman and common council or city hall somewhere, yeah. I forgot where it was, alder people were having a discussion about gun rights and those kind of things, and one of the guys said, he said that there's only, it takes the police 5 minutes if something happened to get to my house. It's five whole minutes.
Yeah.
He said, that's too long. That's reason enough for me to defend my family. And I'm wait a minute, man. 5 minutes, pretty good.
Well,
in a city.
Yeah. I mean, the data on guns used in self-defense, it tells you that the first person who's likely to die
from
a gun is the person who owns the gun. The
right.
Next most likely person to die is a family member. You know, it isn't even on the chart, the notion that that gun would likely be used to in self-defense. It doesn't get used that way. It doesn't. You know, there's accidental deaths in the family. There's suicide death. There's all kinds of deaths that can occur from that gun, but when it is used in self-defense, it makes national news because it is such a rare event.
You know, we'll go to the phone lines after the break because it's too close to break. But you know, Sandy, it's not going to get any better, is it?
Well, you know, before the last break, I was mentioning Alexis de Tocqueville. And
yes.
He's this French philosopher that came to the United States in the 1830s, traveled around the United States. Then he wrote a book about his travels and his comments about American culture.
1830s.
Yeah. And he got it. He was like prescient. He wrote about American individualism and American anti-aristocracy. He said that the American individualism was, and he talked about American exceptionalism, but he wasn't saying it in a complimentary way. He was saying that our individualism was such that we didn't understand the benefit of community, and that we would possibly be so individualistic that we could never buy into the community's interest. And that looks pretty true right now. That looks like a very prescient comment that we in America have not bought into the community responsibility we have, as well as the community interest that we should have in the community welfare. If we did, like they do in Europe, you know, we'd have child daycare, we'd have these things, this safety net for our community. But now, it's all about laissez-faire, you know, caveat emptor, each man to himself. And that's part of our gun lore as well. The gun lore fits into that same mystique.
All right, we've got to go to a break. Our phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. We'll come directly to the phone lines after the break. Sandy Williams is here. We'll be right back. Show as always. You can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. You can text us at the same number. Sandy Williams is here. Sandy, again, Robert Cremo, a young man that, man, should have never had access to guns. And you sometimes wonder if his family. I mean, I have a son who's bipolar and schizophrenic. I've said it over and over and over again. And if I found out my son had access to guns, I would be the first one there saying, what are you doing with a gun? Right? I mean, I know who my son is. I know his challenges mentally. Why would I sit silently and know that he has a gun? I would know that he's not healthy. And so when people know that they have loved ones that aren't healthy.
Yeah, again, though, when we have 400 million guns, you can't count on everyone to do the right thing. Parents, you know, really, the genie's out of the bottle. That's what depresses me about the situation currently is that I don't see the healing trend in almost any of our societal problems, this gun problem. We could pass restrictive laws about guns going forward, but with 400 million guns and 20 million assault rifles out there, the genie's out of the bottle, and we're now dependent on human nature and how human nature will deal with all those guns. And human nature is what it is, you know? And, you know, we can say that we have a... Do we have a bigger problem with human nature in the United States than the rest of the world? No. We have a bigger problem with the number of guns
that
human nature can access.
I was just about to say, you travel the world. So you just came back from Israel. Were there a lot of concealed carry and open carry people walking around?
No,
with
the only open carry I saw was the military, who would be going from home to their base carrying their M16s with them, and the checkpoints and places where, you know, active military was going on. You know, Israel's a place with potential problems.
Right.
And so there is there are armaments present, but there aren't people carrying guns in their pockets, I'll tell you. And if they were, they'd be dealt with.
So that's why, to me, the citizens, and it doesn't mean that the citizens in Israel don't disagree with one another, that everybody's on the same accord, and there's not some things that make people angry.
Oh.
But they forbid their citizenry.
Yeah.
To do that because they know what the outcome of that can be, right?
Well, I think everyone in the world understands that human nature, being what it is, people will flare up. There's such a thing as road rage,
right,
and versions of road rage. And road rage between two people who are unarmed is one thing. Road rage between people who have weapons is another. And that's human nature, okay? What's the difference between the two? Well, human nature isn't different. The presence of guns
right.
is different. And, you know, de Tocqueville, this is what he was talking about when he was talking about individualism and how it is that he thought it might be both a strength and a weakness for America, because we wouldn't have a sense of community, that our individualism could cause us to not have a sense of responsibility to the group welfare. That's part of this whole gun thing. Guns are all about individualism, protecting yourself, defending yourself, right? It's not about defending your community.
So the guy you are talking about, in 1830, saw that individualism. So that's inherent in the American people. I mean, we came from all over.
Well, I think we did come, you know, but we came. What kind of people came to America? People who were willing to pick up and go and leave their
their
families.
Some would say, Sandy, though, that the people who were making it in Europe didn't come to America.
Well, that's right. I mean, okay. In fact, in many respects, people who came to America were on the run. That we had criminals, adventure seekers, people who were fleeing some situation that they found undesirable, people who were looking for independence and freedom.
Right. That's just okay? The truth.
Those are the people who came to America. Well, that creates a profile.
Right.
And they came to America because it was a big, wide-open country where they could have a house of their own, distant from other houses. They could have their 40 acres.
Right.
They could have their section, quarter section. So, you know, we had a hearty lot of independent sorts. They were the type who were here in 1830, and they're probably the type that have been the progeny of those ancestors. So, yeah, it's part of our character. But we ought to recognize human nature, and that's the part that goes out the door in our discussion of guns. It's what goes out the door in our discussion of the community values.
All right, got to go to to the phone lines. Who do we have on the line?
We got Ron from Milwaukee.
Hey, Ron, how you doing, man? Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Hi, Earl. Hey, another problem, underlying problem, and I think maybe de Tocqueville might have gotten a piece of this, is, you know, the expansion of the United States or the colonies westward originally, and the way it worked and the way it happened, created all sorts of property issues in this country, and we still have property issues, and people have an overriding fetish about property, and it's my property and it's not your property, and I'm going to take your property if my use for it is more important than your use, and that's actually been codified into our laws, and I, you know, it really bugs me, you know, and of course, grabbing land from Native Americans and grabbing land from Black people who were freed after the Civil War, just grabbing their land. It just goes on and on. People are still, you know, eminent domain today. Some of that is a good thing, but we just seem to have this whole thing about this is mine and it's not yours. And then that evolved, and I would say this is what underlies modern Republican politics, into this notion that what's mine is mine and what's yours is mine. You know, because I'm the guy who's important. My group, my tribe is what is important, and you're not important. And it's exactly contrary to this idea of community.
Sandy, you understand?
Well, I do think tribalism is the antithesis of community. And tribalism is a nice way of talking about racism, in fact. And I think we have to get to the heart of it and say that much of tribalism has to do with color, people of color. And I think that's at the heart of a great deal of our political problems. It's hard to have a sense of community. People in the Milwaukee metropolitan area don't embrace the problems of the city of Milwaukee. Why not? You know, we should ask ourselves that. Why is the city of Milwaukee not viewed by those who are in the broader community of Milwaukee? Why are they not embracing and attempting as a group to resolve the problems of their community? It's because they choose to be isolated from it. They chose to be isolated when they set up municipal boundaries. They chose to be isolated from it when they moved to those municipalities from the city. And so You know, we have a problem in the United States that has to do with community and commitment to community. People want to choose the community that they'll be committed to. It's pretty easy to be committed to Christ Episcopal Church in Whitefish Bay.
Man, hey, Ron, thank you very much for the call. I agree with you totally. Phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. Sandy Williams in the studio. We'll be right back.
Get me in a crowd of high-class people, and then you act real rude to me.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Sandy Williams is back. He's back. And so I want to talk now, Sandy, about it's just one thing after another, after another, after another. There's a breakdown in this country. There's a war going on. It may not be a civil war, but there's something that's happening in this country that wants to do away. You know, public education was at one point in time, the world marveled at what we were able to do with public education, right? I mean,
yeah,
it was a standard, right?
Well, it was sort of the basis on which we were creating opportunity for everyone. And it was part of our basic democracy was that everyone would have access to the same education. And by having access to the same education, they'd have access to the same opportunity. And it was the basis on which we created essentially upward mobility.
So our forefathers and people who had the opportunity to put all these planks together, that was one of them that I know we took pride in as a nation. And here we are. School's out forever. Arizona moves to kill public education with new universal voucher law. Now, they've been working on this for a while. You know, more and more opportunities for voucher schools and free opportunity at education. It's always been my contention that how does it make sense for people who can afford to pay for their kids to go to private school? What sense does it make then for us to have to pay for them?
Well,
they're not even asking for us to do that.
The principle of vouchers was created essentially initially by those who wanted to make sure they could give the opportunity to go
to private
school to everybody.
Right.
So here in Milwaukee, we had our superintendent of schools, a Milwaukee native, an illustrious, smart guy. African American, who thought that vouchers would be a good idea and that everyone would get vouchers. It was essentially this Arizona plan. The problem with it was that it didn't take into account the ability to create the schools and to monitor the quality of the education within the schools, and so it was a novel market based principle that seemed to have holes in it. I think the fellow who backed it originally is probably not such a strong advocate of it now. But it has been turned on its head by conservatives, and it's now viewed as a mechanism to destroy public schools, which they see as the devil for some reason. It is true that public schools reflect society's problems within the schools, right? It's a public school.
Right, right.
Public schools are basically located in a geography that is local to where they are. And so it is true that in most urban areas, and particularly urban areas that have been marked by a great deal of poverty, the public schools in those places have not performed as well as schools elsewhere.
Right.
And so yeah, will vouchers be the solution to that problem?
Well, so Sandy, so the urban school, public schools, I get it, you know, where you can say maybe that this would be different, but what about suburban public schools that are also under attack and under assault? The same reason.
Sure, I mean,
okay, that are being successful, but there's an attack on public schools.
Well, and it's crazy because schools generally around the country are the source of great pride for the community in which they're located, and there are plenty of examples of terrific public school systems, and Milwaukee used to be one of them and maybe will be again.
But even the suburban schools, public schools, they're going at.
I'm saying there are plenty of examples in the Milwaukee metro area of public schools that are very, very, very good schools and reflect the community pride within them and in fact have been the source of great value to the municipality in which they're located. There's no question that home values in a locality like Whitefish Bay are greatly inflated by the fact that the Whitefish Bay school system is very good. So, you know, this whole notion of the destruction of the public school system is something that's it's a terrible trend, and it's misguided.
In January, State of the State address, Ducey called on Arizona lawmakers to send him bills that would expand school choice any way we can, and the Republican-dominated legislature obliged, delivering last Friday's bill, which will open a pre-existing program for empowerment scholarship accounts up to the entire state. In practice, the law will now give parents who opt out of public schools a debit card for roughly $7,000 per child that can be used to pay for private school tuition, but also for much more, for religious schools, homeschool expenses, tutoring, online classes, education supplies and fees associated with micro schools in which small groups of parents pool resources to hire teachers.
There you go.
What was that about the individualism and
yeah, this is more of de Tocqueville. This is like pull the plug on community values and let's bring it all back to sort of the market base, laissez-faire, caveat emptor.
You know? But Sandy, it's again more and more and more of the same, right? We are just going to, whether you like it or not, we're going to shove this stuff down your throats. And we don't think public schools, and if you don't like public schools, that's fine, Sandy. That's your right, right? Okay? But to do whatever you can to harm the public schools, to me, it's what's at the root of it and what makes it so hateful and evil, and really in long term, damaging to this nation.
Yeah, it's hard to figure out why public schools have become the devil. One of my sons is a public school teacher, and a very dedicated one in a very good school district, and he gets quite a bit of flack because teachers. And what is it about teachers that is a problem? Is it because they belong to a union? Might be.
there's a
great deal of antipathy aimed at teachers generally, and one of the sources of antipathy seems to be the fact that they belong to a union, many of them, and that union is quite vocal about things. It certainly can't be that they're overpaid. You know, it used to be that teachers, they would look at them and say, well, they only work 9 months a year. They work very hard, and they're underpaid for their 9 months of labor that they do work. I don't understand the assault, other than the fact that it's part of the conservative movement, which is very upset with social trends. The thing that seems to upset them most is the teaching of things that would attack sort of mindless American exceptionalism, that would attack the notion of a perfection in America, that would, for instance, address the notion that in the 1800s, much of America's GDP, at least in the South, was premised on slave labor. And what should kids today think right. about slaves? And is that a proper thing to teach? Well, it seems like historical fact, but it seems like a problem to a lot of people that think that their children are being taught shame instead of pride.
Let's go to the phone lines. Who do we have up, Connor?
We got CJ from Stoughton.
All right, CJ, what's going on?
Thank you for taking my call, Earl and Sandy. I praise this issue and decision. This gives an opportunity for all parents to take the money that they're being charged, and I don't have any kids in the school system anymore, but half my taxes go to the school systems, and they're not performing. Many of them are not performing. And Earl, you and I have had this discussion many times. It's a statistic that is undeniable. 85% of kids cannot read at their grade level out of Milwaukee. And I tell you what, if status quo, if you're okay with that, it's not the teacher's fault, it's the parents' fault. And so this is a great decision. It's not against the teachers. They're not paid them up. Their leadership takes them down a road that is abysmal. And I tell you what, this is a great decision for all kids, inner city, all over the country. So I love it.
CJ, where do you live in the Milwaukee metro area?
I don't. I live in Stoughton, Wisconsin. Well,
Stoughton, okay.
Stoughton, Wisconsin.
All right, and so... And the Stoughton School District is not a good school district?
It's a pretty good school district.
Yeah, and so your taxes and your home value is supported by the value that is ascribed to your school district, isn't it? I mean, so when you go to sell your home, the realtor is going to broadcast the fact that your home is located within the Stoughton School District and relatively close to it for the benefit of you know,
but Sandy,
when the Stoughton School District loses
about kids that aren't in my school district.
Oh, you are.
Okay, all right.
You really are, huh?
Okay. Well, I mean, so and that money that's put in the hands of the parents that you don't trust, who are, as you say, providing bad guidance to their children. So when that money is put in their hands, they're going to do a better job of picking a school?
Guys, we got to go to a break. I wish we had more time. Thank you very much for the call. Got to go to a break. We'll be back.
That's all right.
You were, I know you were getting ready to...
No, it's okay.
I know, but he...